Hell yeah.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Detail the best gaming podcast in the world.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Gaming Guru Podcast. My name is Gareth, and of course, as always, joined by Tim Lester. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's good to be back on the pod. It is warm in Cape Town today. I'm sweaty.
It is rather warm. And first of all, I need to say welcome to our usual listeners, and as well as some new listeners, which we might have from Sokla Duma, who have picked up the podcast. Welcome to you all. Very happy to have you. We've been running the podcast now for 3 years, so be sure to check out some of the older episodes. But today, wow, we've got a juicy topic to sink our teeth into, and that is that we're going to take a look at the absolute train wreck that was Cyberpunk 2077, or Cyberflunk, as we have perhaps appropriately named it. And we're going to go into what happened, for those of you who don't know, some of the red flags that might have come up during the way that people seem to ignore, and then perhaps what are the repercussions of it, and are there any ways for us to prevent this sort of thing happening in the future? But I'm going to hand over to Tim now for a second. Tim, maybe you want to take us through a brief history of kind of CD Projekt Red, you know, set the stage for us as we go into the release of Cyberpunk and potentially what exactly went wrong.
Yeah, so, you know, Cyberpunk 2077, easily one of the most anticipated games of 2020. I believe it has been one of the most anticipated games for years now. And, you know, just the fact that this game was on the horizon saw CD Projekt Red stock sort of, you know, steadily climb year on year on year. The game was in development for about 12 years, was first announced in 2012 with a very vague trailer. It didn't really show us much of what was going on, but it was a concept, and it showed us that this beloved company that, you know, we got to know through the Witcher series was working on a new IP, something very different. And there was a lot of excitement around that. So the problems really started with a bunch of delays. We were supposed to have a launch, last year was April, then it got delayed to September, then it got delayed again to December. And then the wheels started to come off when there were a bunch of rules around embargoes, around what reviewers could and could not show. And these are all red flags that we'll get into later. But basically, we had to round it all up. Game came out, game was broken, game didn't work on the current / old gen of consoles, PS4, Xbox One. And here we are, weeks later.
Yeah.
And with a bunch of class action lawsuits, apology videos, big acid yellow text block screens of CDPR saying, yo, sorry, this isn't what you bargained for, offering refunds. Man, it was huge mess. Huge mess.
So let's walk through some of those red flags. I mean, the joke about the yellow apology letters that's become a meme from other companies, or, you know, not actual real companies, but if you want to make a meme about apologizing, you put it on that Cyberpunk yellow with the kind of same font and everything. It's basically become the meme for apologizing for shoddy workmanship. And it's so weird that a company that's built so much goodwill from The Witcher 3 now suddenly almost has traded that all away, and the entire narrative that they have now with their clients is just that of like apologizing. Every other day, it's something about, we're fixing this, we're fixing that, that will come right, you know, just stick with us. As opposed to in the past, you know, basically being seen as
build it and they will come, yeah.
Yes, know. That was the problem. And I think let's talk about probably the biggest flag, and perhaps the elephant in the room, if you want to change analogies, was this idea that, don't worry about it, we made The Witcher 3. And so I believe there was an analysis done by one of the big, I think Kotaku, one of the bigger gaming and media houses, that looked into the culture there at CD Projekt Red and a lot of the problems that were kind of flagged by employees, you know, oh, this isn't working, or this is a, you know, not going according to plan, was met by leadership saying, ah, don't worry about it, we made The Witcher, as if like, because we made this one good game or one game series, now suddenly, you know, it will just come right. It's just like we're God's anointed, and you know, no matter what we do, it will, at the end of the day, no matter how many hardships we have to overcome, you know, everything will come right because we made a good game in the past.
Yeah.
And it seems like that became part of the culture.
Yeah, so you said like all of a sudden, but you know, following this kind of trail of red flags, it's not a unique story, and that's the unfortunate thing about it. It's this whole like overconfidence that management had of, we made The Witcher 3, so it'll all work out. It like rings in a very similar tune to what we heard from the reporting coming out of same guy, Jason Schreier, when he was looking at the crunch development that happened over at BioWare on Anthem, where they had this catch, you know, this coined this catchphrase of BioWare magic, like, oh, don't worry, it'll all work out in the end because of BioWare magic, which is really just like a failure of management at the end of the day. I mean, they're creating, you know, a tagline that can kind of broadly sweep over like the months of crunch and development hell that a lot of these people are going through.
Yeah. I think another major red flag you mentioned was the lack of transparency with reviews. So what had happened is, generally when a game comes out, depending on how, I guess, how big it is or how much of, what do you say, like if it's story-based, and so the spoilers become a huge issue with it, reviewers are generally given copies up to like a week, sometimes 2 weeks before the game comes out, so that they can write their reviews, and then the reviews are out a couple of days before the games come out to obviously build up hype and people excited to play because they're seeing what, you know, reviewers are thinking about it. They generally do allow you to also use your own content that you get from reviewing. So you play the game, you're recording on your PlayStation, whatever, use your own content. They will then specifically embargo certain areas. So no content past Act 2, because it's going to give away spoilers. No content revealing that this character dies. Please don't mention X ability, because then that's going to, you know, give away some of the storylines, all that sort of stuff. So they say, do what you want, just please don't mention the following things. And you kind of get a checklist of things you can't say or do. But generally up to the reviewer to show what they want, because they want it to be the reviewer's honest opinion on what's happening. Now with Cyberpunk, well, some of the red flags that came up here was, first and foremost, there was no review copies given out pretty much in general, like before release. It was all like on review day, which is generally a massive red flag, because you're going, you don't want people saying anything about your game before it's out. You'd rather have people like almost mistakenly have bought it, then the reviews come out, they're going, oh, we got your money, sorry. Or the other thing was that there was no copies given out on console. They were all PC versions, which is the more stable version, as we would reveal a little bit later. And finally, no content whatsoever was allowed from anything but the content they gave you. So it was a case of going, some people were given copies on release day, PC only, and it was a case that the only the videos that you could show were parts that they had provided for you. So obviously stuff that had been potentially doctored to look good, or like obviously no errors or bugs or any glitches happening. Whereas when the game came out, all you could see was just like people complaining about glitches, some just nuisances, some humorous characters just walking through walls and others game breaking, where, you know, a character that you needed to interact with suddenly, you know, phased through a wall and you couldn't work with it. Now, cool, because I can't complete this mission, I can't go further in the game. The game is broken.
I think there was another bug along those lines, where if you had too many of a certain item in your inventory, it would just corrupt your save file, and then your progress is just done. It's like, sorry, mate.
And their solution in the meantime was just like, yeah, okay, don't pick up too many things. Okay, cool. So don't do a thing that the game lets me do, because it's going to ruin my save game. Like, thanks for that effective patch. And so day one, there's patches coming out. I think we are now, you know, over a month from release, you know, having the release window having passed, and they're patching it every other week. And still there's like a a roadmap of patches, you know, when this version is going to come up, when this is going to get fixed. I mean, with the latest patch, they soon discovered a new game-breaking bug, people were saying. Like, there was a massive patch a week or so ago, and then people said, no, you fixed a bunch of other stuff and created more problems. So it's really just shifted the narrative from, like we said, hey, I'm spending time with you guys chatting about my game, and I hope you're loving it. And, you know, here's some updates, here's some DLC content for you to enjoy, to, okay, don't worry about it, just I will fix this game. Sorry about that. The other thing, it's not so much a red flag because everything had fallen apart already, but then the refunds that they were offering. They were going, hey, we're sorry, here are all these refunds. And I mean, we were chatting about this earlier, they didn't agree those refund policies with the distributors. So it's like going your car dealership saying, yeah, cool, your car's broken, sorry about that, you can have a refund from Toyota or whatever. And Toyota going, yeah, no, you can't because you voided the warranty or whatever their reasons are. Like, you've got to actually have like an agreement with the distributor. And they didn't do that. So PlayStation and Xbox and Steam were all going, yeah, well, some of them honored it, but a lot of them went like, yeah, you're going to have to take that up with CD Projekt Red.
So Sony ended up taking the game off the store.
Yeah.
Like, quite quickly when this all happened, during that same week or window where there was that miscommunication around the refunds, who would get, who wouldn't get, Sony saying, yo, we promised nothing. Then they took this game off their store, a game, mind you, that had been marketed big time. I think Sony put a lot of marketing into it as well. It was like front and center up on their store. And, you know, when you think about the game, then like retrospectively, let's say in comparison to its predecessor, Witcher 3, which still to this day is thought about, you know, we think about it, you know, in like endearing terms, like Geralt is on so many memes, you know, there are like emojis of Geralt that I still use and GIFs and stuff.
Yeah.
But everything that's connected to Cyberpunk is now on like the darker side of memes.
Yes,
we're like, we're like,
the dark side of memes.
The dark side of memes, dude, it's true. And like, what's really sad about this is, you know, I think about this, the scenario where not only the reviewers, but the consumers as well were duped through this maneuver where they were holding back the true nature of the state of the game.
Yeah.
From the consumer. And I'm wondering, you know, like that strategy that they took, you know, I think that strategy was more damaging than like getting ahead of the issue, because then they're like adding lies on top of that. So it creates a relationship of dishonesty, like from the get-go, from the start of day one launch between the consumer and the product.
I'm reminded of Miyamoto from Nintendo's saying, he was like, a delayed game is eventually good, but a rushed game is forever bad. And that's the thing, even if they fix it now, it's just a bad game. You know, if they fix it by the year 2077, people are like, yeah, okay, cool, it's always going to go down. Almost as a case study of, you know, just a bad game that just kept getting delayed and getting delayed to the point where like, we can't delay anymore because we're looking like a meme in that sense. But how bad is it really to just continue delaying games? I know famously we talk about Blizzard with Diablo 3 as one of the examples. They were always a studio that always said that we don't deliver games, or we don't launch games until they're ready. Yep. And so Diablo 3 is a famous example of like, it was, I mean, we had a release date, I think. It was one of those things of like coming this quarter and then suddenly announcement going, yeah, it's been pushed out indefinitely. And obviously people are sad and, oh, boo-hoo, and this company's broken and yada, yada. But when it comes out, I mean, there were still problems with the game and it might not have been what everyone wanted, but it ended up being the top-selling PC game of all time when it came out, because it wasn't a broken game. You know, CD Projekt Red with this game, it's the delays and delays. They could have just said, hey, listen, it's not where we wanted to be. We're super sorry. And done proper delays rather than these piecemeal delays of going, we're delaying it from March to September, then September to December. Rather just go, it's delayed until we'll send out a new launch window when we know. And you have to feel like a lot of it might have been stock and share value discussions, you know? They know that any delay announcement like affects their stock value. I mean, that was the irony of all this. The company, I believe, lost $8 billion in stock valuation because of the launch of Cyberpunk. Right. I think that's the other thing. Sorry to jump on, and I'm hogging the mic here, but like, this is not a small company. Yeah. I think people feel that like, oh, they're this good guy company. They haven't made a lot of games, you know. It's but they're the second biggest studio in Europe. But people kind of think because, oh, The Witcher, it's not as big as like Ubisoft and other European studios. I mean, maybe it's credit to how huge Ubisoft is, but it's the idea that like after Ubisoft, CD Projekt Red is the second biggest game development studio in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, like what you just said now reminded me of, yes, like one of their first pieces of marketing was you know, the title Cyberpunk and the release date when it's ready. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was like they already had like an open-ended like a delivery date for themselves, which kind of like really, I think, is the perfect position to have, because you can keep marketing a game and keep working on it. And only when like you're ready to like put the, you know, put the cards on the table, you can do that. And I think they just kind of short sold themselves there. And that sort of feeds into this narrative that that I want to sort of like swing back and forth with you. Like, so why do you think this happened? From what I understand, there were a lot of firsts happening with this game. I mean, you'd think a game that had been in development for like 12 years could deliver on a lot of these promises. But the problem was that from a lot of the investigative journalism done by Jason Schreier, looks like the majority of dev only really started in 2016.
Yeah. So I think for me, the one thing is they kept leveraging this idea that like we made Witcher. So we made The Witcher a third person RPG game that's based in a kind of medieval setting, and more importantly, not our franchise. It is a established kind of lore that we are just taking up and turning into a game. So we've got rich characters, we've got a rich world, we've got a great setting, and we are just turning that into a game. So if they had used that to basically sell the fact that, did you know the new Lord of the Rings game is being done by CD Projekt Red? Or did you know the Game of Thrones game is being done by CD Projekt Red? You go, wow, they've got credentials of taking someone else's like lore, turning it into a game with a medieval RPG setting. Brilliant. I think them leveraging their Witcher 3 credentials would come, you know, like it would stand them in high regard. The difference is here, you're talking about a game that is, first of all, their own IP. Like Cyberpunk is a genre of, storytelling or kind of like thematic in the same
way. No. It wasn't their own IP. It's based on a tabletop, RPG board game. And they worked really closely with the creator.
Okay. My apologies. I didn't realize that. I thought they were using Cyberpunk in the sense that like, you know,
like the genre,
like steampunk, you know, same thing.
Yeah, no, so this is the thing, like they're really good at adapting, you know. So when we look at like, let's say The Witcher 3 as an example, like I've read the Witcher books, like the language and the style and tense and the ways people speak in that game is actually quite different from the writing in the book. I don't think anything was really like lifted, which means that their writing team, and here's the thing, I'll give Cyberpunk that, the writing is great. The writing team really knows how to take a world and adapt it and grow and like build these characters. And I can see that when I play Cyberpunk, there's a good game in there somewhere, you know, you got to go looking for it. Like it's really a talented team. I think they just got kneecapped by management and by the timeline.
Perhaps. I think then also in terms of first, they're doing a first person shooter. Essentially the majority of the game is first person shooting. That's like the main element of the kind of gameplay loop. That is not something they've done before. They've also, it's a brand new engine, and I know that shouldn't be an excuse for talented developers. I mean, you think of like id and even EA releasing new engines pretty much every other kind of production cycle. And so you've got a team that is famous for making a third person RPG medieval setting, you know, using someone else's books and that, to now turn a board game into a first person shooter. And they just, somehow always waved this, you know, this flag. I'm sorry to use the analogy again, but like this flag going, we made The Witcher. It's like, yeah, that's like going, cool, Rockstar Games, you know, made GTA, obviously, but now they're going, now we're making a sports game, or we're making a puzzle game. We made, you know, we made GTA, we'll be fine. You're going, yeah, but have we reached a point now in gaming where, like, you become so good at a certain genre and developing certain games that you almost need a completely separate studio? I mean, I take a production house like Blizzard, where, you know, yes, they make games that are very different from each other, that share sometimes a similar lore. But like the Hearthstone team and the World of Warcraft team and the StarCraft team are all very different teams because they are very different games. You don't just go, oh, well, we just produce several different types of games with the same people.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the game is like barely functional as like a first person shooter.
Yeah.
But dude, what I wanted to say now, and you mentioned Rockstar, playing Cyberpunk 2077 literally like makes me feel like, reminds me that like Rockstar pretty much untouchable. I mean, I jumped back into RDR2 the other day and I'm like, this game is immaculate. Like, I didn't have a single bug playing that game, and it's huge. It's massive. Yeah. You know, it's really like an massive achievement. Yeah. It's really like a testament to like the achievements of the team and the development. Granted, you know, there was definitely a lot of crunch there, but I mean, crunch is being used during the politics. Like, it was crunch in, and they just like sweeped all the awards in the last like 2 months. And that game itself, it's like every space is just littered with so much detail. Like the attention is, you know, it's nuts. It's like OCD. Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's what happens when you drive a team that hard. I'm not condoning that. But what I'm saying is, if you're going to like run your team, you know, at such a high level, and you still come out with a product that's, you know, like, what were you polishing, dude? What were
you polishing? You can't even go like, hey, at least all, you know, when you, I suppose, win an Olympic medal, and you think then like, wow, all those push-ups and all those chicken breasts and broccoli were totally worth it. But when you when you don't even qualify, you know, because you basically, like in this case, you know, send out a turd, you're going like, wow, totally should have eaten that cheeseburger, because what did we do crunch for? Like, so we worked up our kind of back, we broke our backs working 100-hour weeks and that to get this game out, and it's still garbage.
And it's like, barely functional.
100%. So speaking on the barely functional part, that's one of the worst parts for me, is that the consoles that seem to work the best on, I say console, but I mean platforms, PC seemed to be okay. Like, there were several bugs, but attend as most PC kind of setups are, based on your drivers and your personal setup and, you know, what hardware you're using. But generally, PC was the more stable kind of platform. On the latest gen consoles, your Xbox Series X's and your PlayStation 5's tended to be okay. I must admit, on PlayStation 5, I didn't get any crashes. I did have a couple of glitches, you know, like I said,
The PS5 is playing the PS4 Pro version of the game. So it's not even the PS5 version of the game yet. On PS5.
But I guess what I mean is it's stable and it didn't crash due to instability of the system. However, the PS4 and Xbox One versions are so bad. And the worst part for me is going, these were promised as playable on this console. It's not like they gave you a PS5 copy and told you, hey, we've made it backwards compatible. Because then you go, I'm going to forgive the fact that it's slow to load and the graphics aren't great and takes forever to, you know, do anything, because I'm getting to play a next-gen game on an old-gen console. Thank you guys for making this possible. But this is where the game was supposed to land. Remember, delays aside, this game was due to go out in March. There was not even a launch date for the latest gen consoles in March. So this game was designed for the last couple of years and ready, and should have been ready to play on old gen, or that then at that stage current gen consoles. No. When the next delay happened, September, we knew when the PlayStation 5 and Xbox One Series X's were coming out. We knew November, but they weren't out. So this game would have arrived, and CD Projekt Red, being the good guys that they are, said, if you buy the PS4 version or the Xbox One version, when you get the latest gen console, you can upgrade for free digitally. So basically a digital upgrade of your game.
They were still positioning it as that.
They're going,
and it always been.
it's still a PS4 game, but we're going to let you upgrade so you don't have to waste your money buying twice. Also, you don't have to do what some people with considering, okay, I'm not going to buy at launch because I'm going to buy a latest gen console and then I don't want to have an old game, so I'll wait and then buy the latest game. They're going, no, don't worry about it. But don't worry about it. Just buy the current game and we'll sort you out. Don't worry about it. And there were people like, okay, what a bunch of good guys. And remember, they made The Witcher. They're the best. So then next thing comes, the delay happens. Now the consoles are out. So Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 are out. The game is now well within the launch window. So you wouldn't even call it a launch title because it launches like a full month after the consoles are out. You know, it's not Demon Souls and Sackboy that launched with the console. This is now well within the launch window. And what happens? The game's stuffed. It's janky. It's broken. It's like, and you go, wait a minute. This was supposed to be a fully developed, ready-to-go game for PlayStation 4. And you can knock older hardware versus the latest stuff. But like, look what we got with God of War in 2018. Look what we got with Last of Us in 2020. Like, you can make good games on this console. It's not, you're not talking about developing on a PS2 or something.
Yeah, and I mean, like, usually the last couple years of the console's life cycle is when you see, you know, games really shining and looking their best because people have almost learned how to make the most of the hardware and use that engine. And the biggest sin here is, so what they did was they designed the game for PC and then they downscaled it for PS4. So they weren't even like building it to be optimized on the PS4 hardware. They just scaled it back. So it looks like you're playing at like 720p, you know, with like, or like, you know, like when you have like a wooden PC and you got to go into the graphics and just turn off
everything,
turn off the
shadows,
high textures, turn off shadows. Nope. Don't need those, you know, turn off reflections. That is exactly what it looks like. And then when I went into the graphics settings to like check out what's going on there, they basically put like a film grain, motion blur, lens flares, and like a bloom glow to try and cover up how ugly it is. But those things I thought was just like making me lose frames. So I turned them all off so I could get like better performance.
Yeah.
And I think I'm getting like a few more frames, but now I'm playing in like... Like, what the hell is this, dude?
Yeah.
Like, this isn't what I was promised.
I mean, the frame rate, I mean, I saw a graphic comparison. You basically want your game to be running at the very least 30 frames a second. That's like smooth. 60 frames is obviously the target everyone's going for. You know, if you've got a beast of a PC or some of the PlayStation 5 games, I know, like, will lock natively 60 frames. But if you start dropping under, I think, 24 frames, you get this visibly noticed kind of lag. Guys were posting screenshots of the game running in the low teens, like 13, 14 frames. It basically looks like a slideshow, or that you're playing the game via SMS. You know, like, you know, next screen coming now, downloading, next screen coming now. And to play, you know, it's one thing to have your mobile card game that runs at 17 frames a second. But to have a first-person shooter, arguably, I'd say the genre that, like, you would most notice a loss of frames. Maybe that, and your action RPGs, like your Souls games, those sort of things. Like, if you drop frames in a first-person shooter, like, that's absolutely like a sin. You know, I could think of many other games where drop frames are okay, but in a shooter, absolutely not.
Gareth, in what games is it okay to drop frames? Tetris?
I'm being obviously hyperbolic here, but like it's one of those things where you go, if you drop frames in a sport, anything to do with speed, I guess, is the issue. You know, I'd say in a sports game, it's less favorable, but okay. But like racing games, action fighting games, I mean, here's a classic example. In fighting games, guys will go into the data of the characters to know how many frames they have in terms of what they call active and passive and recovery frames. So when you're punching, that punch takes 6 frames to connect. So you are able to do violence over those 6 frames. Then you recover for like 6 frames. So in that 6 frames, you can't do anything because you're getting back to recovery space. Then you've got like neutral frames where you're ready to go again. So if you lose frames, I mean, the fact that in the fighting game community, a lot of them still don't play, that they don't play on wireless controllers because you lose frames. they don't play, a lot of them don't play on LCD screens because you lose frames. They're playing on old cathode ray CRT monitors because you're getting the least frames dropped. You know, there's an input lag. And to have input lag of even a frame can be the difference between connecting a patch or not. So.
And look, we're talking about frames a lot, but I think like that's the least of this game's problems. Yeah. Like if I had to just kind of breeze over quickly, like a bit of my time with the game, I have about maybe 15 hours. You know, there was one moment literally in a gameplay yesterday where I pulled up my weapon and then it took like almost 2 seconds for the weapon to materialize and pop into my hand. So I was getting pop in on like one of the most basic things, like drawing my gun. Yeah. You know, you'd like walk into a street and there'll be nothing there. And then you turn around and then there's suddenly a crowd of people. And then you turn around again and those people are gone and they start popping in. It's so bizarre. Like people will like walk from one side of the street to the other and then just like disappear. Like characters will routinely just have items on them, like move around. I think there was one scene where like Johnny Silverhands was having a smoke. And then he like put his cigarette out, but the cigarette was still like floating in front of his face for like the whole dialogue scene. And then there was another time when I was going towards, I was in combat and I ran around the corner. I was like running away from some dudes. And as I ran around the corner into this alleyway, there was just nothing. It was like, you know, when you fall through the level of a game and it's just blank, it's just gray. And then slowly, like the road came in, the shops came in, all the pop-in was nuts. Oh, and this is the best one. I was driving on the motorbike. I had a motorbike crash. My bike like flipped through the air and landed upside down, perfectly upside down, like standing up straight, but upside down. So I went up to it thinking my character could like, you know, flip the bike and I click like, you know, square for like get on the bike. Then my character climbs on the bike upside down. So now I'm on the bike, but I'm like facing the wrong way in like the level architecture.
Yeah.
I'm like upside down. And then just exploded. It just blew up.
Oh. I've seen
I was like, cool,
one.
Thanks, enough cyberpunk for today.
I've seen another one where someone would, it's like when you vault, like jump into a window frame or something. So you smash the window out, now you're going to jump through. For some reason, vaulting through certain windows yeets your character like 100 meters backwards, but like in a straight line, it kind of looks like when you zoom in with a sniper rifle, you know, that instant zoom where you get super close basically, but in reverse. So it basically looks like, you know, your character's there at the window and you somehow zoomed out to a mountain where your sniper is about to take a shot at that same window. But your character's like, oh, I'm like 300 meters from the window I'm trying to break into now. And then of course the other one that was famous was that dude who's playing a paraplegic like guy begging for money. And then you like pull out your weapon or something and the character gets scared because obviously they've been programmed to get scared if you draw a weapon on an unarmed character. And so he just gets up and runs. Like he doesn't matter his legs are broken or that he's paraplegic. He just like gets up and runs.
Yeah, it's Night City, dude. I bet he was faking it.
Yeah, maybe. He was just faking
it. That's just his gig. So here's the thing, you know, there's like I said, there's a good game in there somewhere, but you really have to go looking for it. And you know, they made this a first-person game is because they really wanted that sense of immersion, you know, and there are moments where it connects with me. I'm like, okay, you know, the music's good, like the story's good, like there's tension that's ramping up, and I feel like I'm playing a good game. But then something will happen which will suck me right out of that, and I'll be like, oh, I'm actually playing like a broken mess of a game.
Because playing broken games is fun when that's part of the experience. I mean, when guys are playing these games with the terribly ridiculous, almost yeety, what do you call it, gravity, you know, where like hitting something makes it fly through the window and it's just, it's ridiculous. And that's kind of part of the game. You're like, how is this, what am I going to do next going to mess the game up? And so there's fun in that. But like you said, if you're making a super immersive, you are in there, you believe this is your character, and then you have moments where like exactly your car disappears or you spawn upside down or you get, you know, thrown through a window 100 meters away, you're kind of like, I'm really struggling to believe that this is real.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, at the best of times it's like an 8 out of 10, and at the worst of times it's a 4 out of 10, maybe even as low as a 2 out of 10 if you get one of these bugs that breaks your like a quest. and you can't complete your quest. I think that is one of the cardinal sins of game design. If I can't actually complete a quest because of a bug, then there's a big issue. And then also a lot of these bugs, because a lot of the narrative is designed around, because you're in the world of cyberpunk and everyone has these cybernetic implants, like things glitch. Like when your own cybernetics start malfunctioning, the screen goes glitchy and things happen. So it's like, which glitches are intended and which bugs aren't? I'm just so confused. Is this meant to be this way? Like, and oh, is that? And then you'd have to go sit and scroll through, you know, a Reddit thread to find out, oh, it is actually a bug. It is actually broken. I'm not alone in this. And yeah, for me, like, that is a gigantic waste of time.
Okay, so some questions for you then. Can Cyberpunk be saved?
I mean, look, the short answer to that is yes. Like, given enough time to work on the game, like, well, it'll eventually get to a state where, you know, it can probably be recommended. It can probably, like, win an award for most improved game or something, you know? Yeah, most improved game, right? They can build a narrative of like, underdog where, oh, we came in, game was bad, we did lots of work, game good now, you know? So the game can be saved. But the taste is going to stay in our mouths for a very long time. Yeah. And I don't know if the franchise itself will be able to come back from this gigantic meme of a marketing cycle.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking, as you said, can it come back? You look at something like No Man's Sky, which goes from also being a completely broken mess, broken promises, all the things the game said it would be, wasn't, and then starts winning, maybe not Game of the Year awards, but certainly several awards in terms of like all the features that they added post the game. And so if you stuck with it, or if you, you know, you got your money back and then bought it again later, you were rewarded for, you know, the game kind of like reliving or coming back to kind of deliver on the promises that it had originally. But obviously there is a, like you said, a bad taste in the mouth. They had to do a lot of work, and certainly more work than if they had just gotten it half right the first time. Yeah. Then they had to do it, like basically go from, instead of a zero base, actually go from a negative base to get people's kind of positivity back. And I'm sure there are people that they lost who they'll never get back. And that not only is for No Man's Sky, but for future games. They go like, I will not ever buy a game from that studio on release. I will always wait for it to, you know, the reviews to come out and be told that it's working as proclaimed, you know.
Yeah. So,
another question then, so we said like Cyberpunk can be saved, but what does it mean for CD Projekt Red?
So here's the thing, like CD Projekt Red, a company who famously has what, like only put out like two games in the last like two decades, right?
Yeah.
So all that time in between in development and all the other business processes they have going on, because they're a publicly traded company, their currency for the last like very short while has been their communications, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what's been like driving their stock price back and forth, the promise of X.
Yeah, and the way that product or their new product. It's the selling old product and IP.
So what it means for them is that they've lost a heck of a lot of goodwill from with the community. I mean, The Witcher 3 is still in my heart, one of the greatest games I've ever played. But my fondness for the company that put that game out has taken a back seat, and I don't have that same level of trust in them that I have. And I think that's spilling over to investors as well. Like they have a class action lawsuit now from basically saying that they defrauded investors, and it's pretty sure that they're going to like lose this or like settle for a large amount. So they're taking a big knock on the brand, on their stock price. Yeah. And what it means for them is when they want to come back to the markets with a new offering, they're going to have to really rework the way they do things from the top down, because there are like organizational issues here that led to this happening.
Yeah. I have to say, from the outside looking in, they still seem like a good company, as in like, or at least they look after their people. So I know there've been talks about their crunch culture and all that sort of stuff, which seems to be more a problem of the industry than this company in particular. I'm not trying to defend it, but it's the idea that like, for example, when they saw that the game was broken, the executives kind of fell on the sword saying that, like, we knew it was broken, we still published it. It wasn't a case of going, like, you know, we thought we could fix it later, but we basically knew we were setting out a bad game, rather than going, oh, this was never made known to us, and the developers had bugs that they were hiding, that sort of stuff. And they also then, I remember reading saying, they usually link their bonuses, so all the developers' bonuses to their Metacritic scores. So if they get a 7, they get X. If they get 8, they get X plus Y. And if they get 9s, you know, like, and they said that their bonuses would not be linked to the review scores. The bonuses would be linked to, obviously, like, their internal work KPI. So, you know, people working the right amount of hours and whatever their job entails. You know, I can't go through every job and how they get assessed. But, you know, the external motivator for their bonuses was removed because, you know, we forced you to put out a garbage product and now we're going to punish you with your bonuses being paid or not paid based on how people like the game that we forced you to put out, even though you told us was broken. So in that speaks to a company that still has its employees' goodwill at heart. I think, if anything, it feels like the pressure to have this game out and almost like done with, like it feels like almost like an albatross type thing of going like, they had this thing hanging on their necks for 12 years and they're just like, get it out of here. We've got to start working on the next thing. And it was just a case of like, just get it out. We just want this game done. And in a lot of ways, I blame like ourselves as gamers for this idea that like, I know we get disappointed by game delays, but yes, we let studios know it, you know, when we're disappointed game's out. So you're almost in this lose-lose situation. It's like, if I delay the game, the facts are the game is bad and broken. My options are delay or release the game. I mean, obviously there's sub options there. It's like delay and give a lie, delay and tell the truth, you know, all this stuff. But like basically delay or deliver. And you're going, I'm going to get roasted if I delay, especially at the point that Cyberpunk had become a meme for delays. Like the minute you saw that yellow background, you're like, oh, there's a delay. That's what it is. It almost became the thing of like, if you need to tell your friends like, hey, I'm going to be a bit late to the party or whatever, you can, if you send it in that font, they'll be like, okay, he's going to be late. Like, it's just, that became the meme for delayed gratification, I guess. Or you know, release the game as they did and you get taken to the cleaners anyway. So it really is a lose-lose situation. And I think a lot of the blame has to go on us, on hype culture, because a lot of the problem, I guess, in the gaming industry at the moment is this hype culture. It's the fact that, and I'm super guilty of it, it's the fact that God of War Ragnarok can literally show a logo and Kratos saying two lines without seeing a single visual. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm done. Like, yeah, take my money. That's just
so, hype culture. So yeah, but we're like also part to blame, right? It was, you know, I say that like with a huge pinch of salt, because I mean, I'm not, you know, on the board of CDPR, was caught up on the hype. Exactly. I was caught up on the hype train and I also propped this company up. You know, I was like, you know, most publishers are, you know, they just want my money. They're soulless. Android Wilson, you know, Bobby Kotick, they can all, you know, they can all eat it. But CDPR, those are my guys. Those are my men. Take my money, you know, and it was like, we've been propping up this company for years. And like, rightly so, I think it went to their heads. You know, they had this ballooning stock price. And that all kind of fed that overconfidence monster that caused these breakdowns in management, where I think when it comes to moving forward on this game and the next releases, they need to address the systemic issues and disconnect between the board, marketing, and like development, because marketing was promising things that development were like, are we supposed to do that in, you know, like, you know, in this timeline with all this new technology. So it was overpromised, it was overhyped, and there was overconfidence that was added to from a lot of different angles, kind of led to where we are.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess one kind of parting question is this idea of unfinished or unreleased games. I think gamers have almost created a problem by allowing these alpha or new unreleased content sort of thing. Like a lot of games will go, this is an alpha build. It is not the finished game, but you can buy it for like 60% of the price. And, you know, when the game's finished, you know, we can, you know, you can get it discounted or you can get the full game for free. It's almost like a buy it while it's broken, give us the money to finish it. And that's fine when you're a small indie developer that needs the runway because, you know, you've used up your investment and you're staying at your parents' house while you build this game. And so you need like a little bit of help to get through. But, you know, we're not talking about a small development studio here. We're talking about the second biggest studio in Europe. So for them to release an unfinished game, I mean, we joked about comparison in the movie industry. You know, imagine you went to go watch the latest Marvel blockbuster and you still see like the green screens in the background or some of the CGI still goes, insert asset here, like this will be finished later. And you're just going, this is not okay. And then having fanboys go, it's okay, it's pre-alpha, you can't expect it to be finished. It's like, yeah, no, I can expect it to be finished. They're expecting my money. Yeah, I think it's a problem we've created that, you know, it's we're finally, it's the chickens coming home to roost sort of thing of accepting unfinished products. That now we, you know, we're being charged full price for unfinished products. But that it really is a mess. They're doing their best to fix it, I guess. And so for those who bought the game and are kind of stuck with it, hopefully your money ends up being worthwhile in the end. Maybe it becomes a No Man's Sky that becomes full of value. Hopefully CD Projekt Red turn around and with their, whatever their latest game is, manage to build back that esteem that they've managed to garner over all the years with the Witcher franchise. Other than that, we would love to know your thoughts on CD Projekt Red and on Cyberpunk. Was this a game you purchased? Was it something you saw the red flags and kind of knew, no matter who these red flags we waved against, red flags are still red flags. And so avoid it. But yeah, let us know on Twitter. We are @guru_podcast. Love to hear your thoughts there. Otherwise, Tim is @TimAndAFish. I am @TheGarethWoods, all on Twitter. Would love to know your thoughts and let us know what you think about the whole CD Projekt thing and whether they can turn around in the years to come. But that is us for this week's episode of the Gaming Guru Podcast. We will be back in a week or so with a brand new episode. Thanks as always for tuning in. It's been an absolute pleasure. And until next time, you know, go out and play some games. Ooh, baby.